Hi, and welcome to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. Today, I'm sharing an interview I did with Josh Akins. He works at Zonos, and he will tell us a little bit more about himself. But just to preview and introduce, I want to share that the reason I'm publishing this interview this week in particular is that there is an exciting event taking place next week, first week of November, and it's going to be a forum. So Josh and I both know each other from the Housing Action Coalition of Southern Utah. That's just a group of concerned citizens who we want to get creative ideas happening and being implemented in the attainable housing space in our county. And we're both on the Public Awareness Committee. So our group has put together a forum on the topic of solving attainable housing. And I'm going to post a link to the event in our show notes. So if you're interested, you can go over there and RSVP and go listen to some cool, smart movers and shakers talk about attainable housing next week. In the meantime, here is my conversation with Josh.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Josh. I was wondering if you could get us started by just telling us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So I am a resident of St. George for about the last 27 years. I was born and raised in Ogden, Utah area, and married a girl from my high school, and we moved to St. George together in 97. And have lived mostly in the city of St. George, Green Valley area, and now live in the Santa Clara Heights area. And I came to St. George to do television and video production, and that was kind of my space for the first 10, 15 years of my career. And then I eventually crossed over into working in tech, starting with mobile app development and development companies. I don't develop apps, but I've worked for people that do. And most recently, over the last 7 years, I have been with a company in St. George called Zonos. We were iGlobal Stores when I joined, and then we rebranded as Zonos, and we have offices where we're sitting up here on Tech Ridge. And Zonos is a software company that does custom, that we create custom calculations for duties for cross-border e-commerce or commerce in general. So duties, taxes, and fee calculations for commerce. So kind of an interesting little funny niche to be doing in the desert in Southwest Utah. But
yes,
our founder, Clint Reed, thought that this would be a great place to live with his family and build a business. So that's why we're here.
And it is a great place to live, and that is one of the main things we want to talk about, right, is housing. So this is a housing-focused podcast.
Very appropriate, yeah.
Yes. So my question is, if that's, like, if your background is Zonos and international trade type stuff, how did you get interested in attainable housing? Because I know you from the Housing Action Coalition Committee. So I know that that's something that you care about and you're interested in. So how did you get here as far as participating in that committee?
Really good question. So I would say initially, when I moved over into tech, I started helping with a little tech meetup. It used to be called the Dixie Techs. And then eventually we called it the Silicon Slopes St. George chapter. And that was a monthly lunch meetup, but it got me involved with a lot of people in the tech space. And as I've grown into this role of chief of staff at Zonos, and Zonos has grown and added more and more people to the team, we've gone from 30 or so employees to about 130 employees. Mm-hmm. So one of the concerns that we have as an organization is growth. Is being able to, at times, relocate people or find talent within our local community. So that's one hat. Mm-hmm. A second hat that I wear is just that sort of overall tech community hat, where it's more like an economic development activity that I participate in, where I really wanted to honestly kind of plow the field and prepare the soil for my own selfish purposes. I want my children to be able to have jobs in Southern Utah and maybe live in a house or a nice apartment. Yeah. And so that my future grandchildren can be here with me.
Yeah.
Thirdly, is Charlene Quell, who has become my friend from, she was at U-Star and then she's at the City, and she had a major involvement in Hack. So my introduction, you know, I watched it from afar, maybe you could say, and then been introduced to it and heard about it. And so all my worlds kind of collided because legitimately Zonos has a concern about how we're going to help solve the problem of housing in our area. So just to kind of wrap it up, I went to a really neat meeting. It was probably more than a year and a half ago. And it was a lot of public sector leaders and even builders and private sector. And we went through a kind of a workshop and we talked about these issues that we're facing. And as I listened to everybody talk, I kind of settled, like my mind went to, oh, I think one of the problems that maybe I could participate in or have some effect on is this public awareness of the not in my backyard syndrome that comes up when you think about any sort of change that's next door to where you happen to be. And I felt like that's, you know, I'm not going to run for office and vote something out, and I don't have time to be on the planning commission right now. So I thought, well, I can maybe help with this piece. And so that's how really I got involved, is I raised my hand and I said, I want to be a part of telling the stories in a positive light about what the needs are, not negating what the challenges are, but what our needs are and good ways that we can come to solve those problems.
So the Housing Action Coalition, they have a few different working groups or groups that do different things. Mm-hmm. So are you focus mainly in the public awareness group? Is that right?
Yes. Carol Halliwell and I were the first to kind of raise our hands and say, this is the problem we need to work on. And, and it's a scope that goes all the way from her concerned constituents, which are our people in need of housing, all the way up to my concerned constituents, which are people that are relocating with pretty tremendously good paying jobs. And we both still have the problem. So we kind of come at it from the top and the bottom.
And can you tell us who Carol Halliwell is, just for listeners who don't know who she is?
Yes. Carol is the executive director, I think you would call her, of Switchpoint. So Switchpoint is our community housing it's not a homeless shelter. I mean, that's too short of a term for what they do at Switchpoint.
They serve the most high needs housing populations who have the hardest.
That's a good way.
Economic situations. Seems like. Okay, thank you. And then, so what? As you've participated in the group, what have you seen them do so far, and what kinds of projects are they involved in, and are you involved in with the coalition?
Absolutely. So we identified that we wanted to do the public awareness messaging and sort of campaigning side of things to start off with. And so we pulled together a framework. So Alicia Maldonado, who is kind of our handler, I guess you could say, she's the one that sends out the emails and makes sure that things get done. She shared a really, really great kind of framework with us, and then Carol and I and others, we kind of went out and shared it around with a group of people and got a pretty good handful of people to raise their hand and say, we want to be on this team too. And that's kind of, and that's kind of how our committee grew. And we just started with like the basic core messaging and discussions about what those things could look like and what kind of deliverable pieces could they be. A website, a slide presentation, stories to be published, videos to be made, or radio commercials, or those kind of things. And that's what we were kind of working on. And then, honestly, it felt like another committee was getting involved in creating an event, right?
Like an expo or a forum.
Right? Expo. And then we kind of all sort of like, it feels like we've all kind of like mashed
coming
together
back together
in a bit, because we all kind of have the same guiding principles and the same to-dos. Because not any one of us can fix any of these problems. It's more like all of us are needed, and the stories and the information and the sharing comes across all the different groups. So we're kind of getting back together now. But the event is still on its way, and so are the messaging pieces basically being developed.
So how far along, like, it sounds like there's a lot of things are still kind of in embryo. Is that, because this will be the first event that they've had.
Yes.
What have they, has your group had any deliverables yet, or are they still, sounds like you're still working on messaging, kind of, I guess, what?
Good
What's
question.
The status right now?
So the HAC website has a lot of the information already published on it. So in a way, we kind of needed to, I mean, we kind of got together and brainstormed a bunch of things. And then Sherlyn's like, yeah, great. Here they are actually written down. And we're like, oh, yay. They're already there.
Okay.
So, but our next step is actually, we're in the midst of trying to identify some So there's been a really great study that Rick Atkins' group did that kind of gave us some personas of people that are in need, and we're identifying people that we know that fit that persona well enough and can approach and say, hey, would you be willing to let us tell your story? Let us do a podcast or make a short video or write a story that would resonate with the community, and then. In professional terms, it would be kind of like writing a case study, where you sit down, interview, get all the data and information, and then put it in a very compact way that's very easily digestible, and then share that around the community. So we're in the midst of doing that. I'm not sure that we'll have all those. I'm not sure if we're going to have those done by the expo or if those are going to get done after the expo. But
I know that the expo team, we're hoping it'll be done because we want to share some of those videos, and Alicia's getting ready to interview people.
All right. So
I'm excited
speak for
about
the expo
it.
Team, and I'll speak for the need to get off our butt and get these videos done.
Yeah. And I'm excited about that because I really feel like stories are one of the best ways to make it real for people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of times when we get into that not in my backyard idea, we are forgetting like my children, my grandchildren, my neighbors, you know, nieces and nephews or whatever. They are those people that need that housing.
Yes,
and there's different stages of life.
There's perception issues that we need to deal with. And that study that Rick did and the personas that he came up with, they're very real people. They're not... the people that live in the projects in Western Detroit or something like that from 40 years ago when some of us went to school and were taught that that's what dense housing looks like. That's not what dense housing looks like today. But we're kind of trapped in that mindset. And so I think we're thinking helping to tell those stories will help to maybe loosen up that mindset a little bit and allow us to change. I don't know if I want to say change minds, but broaden
expand thinking.
We have to be empathetic of people who live in certain areas for certain reasons, and they want those areas to be like that in perpetuity because that's why they chose to be there, and that's a valid perspective as well.
Yeah, I've argued with my husband about this because he very much loves everything about Southern Utah. He grew up here. Mm-hmm. He loves our neighborhood. He loves it how it is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's not really fair for the state to come and say, well, everybody can have a basement apartment now because that changes the nature of the neighborhood that was already existing. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what about if in a new neighborhood, they know that that's going to be that way? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I'm more open-minded to that.
Yeah, see? Look, you found some middle ground.
Like, I was so happy because he and I are often on the opposite. I like to play like the devil's advocate and say, well, what about this? Well, what about this? Well, what about our kids? Mm-hmm. And yeah. So what are your thoughts on the role of the state as far as like legislation, taking a proactive approach about attainable housing? Because I know they have had like SB9, some different legislative pieces have been coming through. Like, what are your thoughts on some of those?
I appreciate that question because as I kind of got more involved in this hack, I did some reading, and I found some really excellent scholarly articles out of places like Harvard that talked about I wouldn't call them diametrically opposed, but this the idea in the United States in general that we try and get these types of decisions as close to, down to the people as possible. So that's why you have like these very small community zoning boards, you know, where you can have open meetings and people can come in and
give feedback
and all that kind of stuff. Because we want to kind of get it down to that very grassrootsy level. And if you just explain that to someone, they just nod and say, yes, that just makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But then if you take a step back and you look at it from a tiny bit broader societal view, all of a sudden you see all these roadblocks to in bigger cities it really hurts transportation because people don't want to see different types of transportation or buses or lines or trains or these things
that are new as an area grows.
That's not our issue so much. It's going to be, and we're going to hack.
We're getting there.
Track at some point, right?
Yeah.
But currently, those are the problems that. And to tell a kind of a story around that, I was here back in the Vision Dixie days. So like 20 years ago, we all sat around these big tables and we drew maps and we discussed how do we want to grow this next phase of St. George. And the consensus literally was we have all this space within our space where we can do all kinds of cool things within the blocks, within the city and within the area. And we kind of wanted to do that and have like urban sprawl simultaneous because like there was still good land
have
to build
our cake
on. Yeah,
and I need it too.
We could do both. Yep. But then what ended up happening is not that. What ended up happening is Little Valley. Little Valley grew like under our noses like a million miles an hour and before you knew it, there was a 125 mile an hour road for 700 miles in one direction. And no commercial, no throughways, and no way to get anywhere. So, like, you want to leave your house to go get your swig, you have to drive 4 miles on a 25-mile-an-hour road with children playing all over the place.
And there are hundreds of other people trying to go on that same 25-mile-an-hour road.
Exactly.
And so it takes forever.
Exactly. So I don't blame any one of those homeowners for saying, hey, I don't want this next plot next to me to have a bunch of gas stations and all this kind of stuff, and that ruins the vibe of my house. I don't blame them for that. They wanted another cul-de-sac with more families on it because that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
At the grassroots level, at the I want what I want next to my house level, that worked for them, and I don't blame them for that. It's not working for them now because at the grassroots level, it only worked. It doesn't work for the broader, like, planning perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's so back to your question. What do I see the state or policymakers outside of the neighborhood can do? And these are some of the things they can do. They can look at it from a little bit higher level perspective and create a little cover basically for those planning commissions and for those city councils to allow them to more easily make the decisions that are better for the full community instead of just get stuck only making decisions for the loud constituency that live next door. And I think both perspectives have to be considered. But I do think that the state in some of these things that you just talked about is creating more cover, can create more cover like accessory dwellings and things like that, that will allow people will allow us to get better outcomes and make some people a little bit grumpy, but not totally ruin the vibe of their neighborhoods.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's an interesting challenge because especially when growth is happening so fast, like I've seen in the building industry where you can say to somebody who's getting a new house built right here, just so you know, zoned right behind you is a multifamily, blah, blah, blah. And because they don't see it, because they are so excited about their new house and that's their total focus, they're like, okay. And they buy their house. And then, you know, 6 months to a year later, they're like, oh, that's what? What are these plans going through the city that are 3 stories high? What are you talking about? And it comes as a big shock when they may have been told it, but it's like they just didn't hear. So I like that idea of having more distant perspective. It's nice the state's there to do that.
Airports are notorious for that, right? Everybody's like, oh, I don't mind being right off the runway. It's such a beautiful view. And before you know it, the poor airport authority is pulling out their hair because everybody's so mad about planes. And they're like, this is an airport. What did you expect, people? So yes, that's so I do think that but public policy on a broader scale can have a positive effect. I don't want it to completely supersede that of the neighbors. That's why I think, honestly, it's the storytelling. It feels to me like more the solution to the problem, which is having everyone be heard and getting people on board with something that they can all agree on and get behind. We're not out of land. We're not landlocked yet. We're not out of the ability to make choices with the property, with the downtown area that we have in St. George, with the different areas around. We still, I think we still have a chance. And if we get the right, if we get enough people on board in the right areas to say, hey, we want this and we'll take this, and this mixed use is good for our community, for our society, and we'll make some concessions ourselves from, you know, quarter acre sprawls and horse properties, which is what we all want in you know, in our backyard.
Because we love them, because we're familiar with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We'll make some concessions and see how she goes.
Good. Yeah. All right. So what are some solutions that you see for attainability? Like what, if you could make policy right now or envision a better future, what solutions do you see?
Well, I would say I'm pretty bullish on what's actually happening. I had a little epiphany. I was really concerned. I mean, professionally here at Zonos and the other companies that are building software on Tech Ridge, we definitely are growing and bringing higher paying jobs, better jobs for members of our community and outside. And to be honest with you, it's much more inside than outside. Like, we don't relocate a lot of people in any of these tech companies and tech jobs, partially because there are so many wonderful people in our community that that are looking to upgrade or upskill or get better jobs. So it's not that big of a deal. I honestly, I'm thinking more about my own children. We all have children, and that's really where the big growth numbers are coming from, is just people getting older.
Especially in Utah. We still have lots of young kids.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And getting jobs. Guilty. Yep. I have four, and they still are either under my roof or in college at this point. So, but the epiphany that struck me was in this sort of like COVID restructuring of, hey, I might be able to work anywhere but live in St. George. And that did bring a lot of people and a lot of talent to our community, because they were like, I could, you know, maybe the house is expensive in St. George, but it's about equal to the expense of my home in, say, Colorado
or Seattle,
Idaho or Wyoming.
California.
Yeah. So they were like, okay, so I can come here, live here, work here, have all the things that the people that live here and work here have, and win-win for me. But what that did, obviously, is it decreased supply, increased demand,
which then on the housing market.
Yes, on the housing market, across the board, and I have this. It created an unrealistic price point for a 3-bedroom apartment. A 3-bedroom townhome for $800,000. Now, I saw one of those in a listing, and I was like, oh my goodness, wow. You know,
Is this where we've come?
But the thing that all that did is it created a market. It created a market where people could come back to St. George. I was here before 2008, when we were building lots of houses, and houses worth a lot of money, and a lot of builders and a lot of developers were doing really well in that marketplace, right? Yeah. And so they were incentivized to build more. That was an artificial marketplace that was perpetrated by some really bad loans and other things, right? And we went through that whole correction, right?
Yes.
And I'm not saying we're coming up on that type of a bubble, because no one's telling me that that's happening. I'm not an economist.
Yeah, I keep not hearing that. Right? People keep asking and hoping.
Yes, I'm not an economist, and I don't see that. That's not the thing that's happening. But that said, that outsized demand, that wonderful, like, margin of earning between what it... And you'd think that margin was big, but go to those people that built those 3-bedroom townhomes. They already cost them like $400,000 or $500,000 or $600,000 or $700,000 to build the darn things, because of materials,
because of
cost of labor, all those things. They're not. I don't think anybody's trying to make out on anybody else here, like mm-hmm. get rich, mm-hmm. right? They're all just trying to do their jobs. That said, I've watched and just looked a little bit at all the different growing communities within our community, mm-hmm. all the different developments that are going on out in the Hurricane area, all the different developments that are going on over by Desert Color area, the new different types of developments over by me in Santa Clara and mm-hmm. Hyannis. There's these great apartments just across the street from the intermediate school now. They're beautiful, and they're filling up like lightning, and that's nothing that ever would have really been proposed or imagined in a field behind, you know, a school in Santa Clara, in front of a school mm-hmm. in Santa Clara, right? All that demand has created an influx of supply. At some point, we're going to go this way again, right? The supply is going to come up. The demand is going to come back down,
together.
We're going to
yeah.
get to a place. It's not going to be, hopefully it's not going to be where we all lose our homes, because I also did that in 2008. So I've been to all the places, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we don't want to go to where everyone loses their shirt and we just get upside yeah. down in distressed properties and have to go through that whole thing again. Hopefully that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about this amount of demand and the supply coming up to meet it. But I've learned through hanging out with some of the people on the HAC committee that we, as a statewide problem, and St. George in specific, are just woefully behind. We're just
yeah.
we're just backlogged on the amount of this type of supply that needs to be in within our community.
Mm-hmm.
So this new
for
stuff,
a new household yes, formation, we're just behind.
These new houses, this is something else I've learned, is all these new ones that are coming on and coming on and coming on, there's going to be people, and I could be an example of someone that might say, hey, I want to live on Tech Ridge. I want to move to that community. So what happens to the home I'm living in right now? It becomes available for someone else to rent.
Yeah.
In my case, I'm renting my home. It becomes available for someone else, and it happens to be 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years older than when I started renting it.
Which so makes it more affordable.
It makes it a little bit more affordable for the next yeah. person to come in. So, mm-hmm. so the brand new creates more affordability with the old.
In the existing housing stock.
So
yeah,
when
for sure.
The question you asked is, what do I see as, you know, a solution to the problem? I think I'm quite bullish on what's happening right now being a major part of the solution to the problem.
Mm-hmm. And when you say what's happening right now, you're talking about like all this new housing
all
stock
new,
that's coming to market.
All the new housing stock coming to market, yes, in
and
the new
it,
communities.
They're doing it better. They just do it better than they used to. They always put open space with them. I just see a lot of good things in the things that I'm seeing that are more dense.
Commercial.
Too, so.
Parks.
Mm-hmm.
Tech Ridge is a really good example of mixed use housing. Simply high density. There's mm-hmm. there's no horse properties up here. There's
yeah.
just going to be high density, but there'll be live, work, play, walkable type community
mm-hmm.
within this 180 acres with the trails and everything
yeah.
all together. So it's a good example, and it's also very water wise. So I'm kind mm-hmm. of bullish on that, because it will, you mentioned earlier, we like what we know and we like
yeah.
what we've seen. Once we get some more of what we've seen, like for instance, the Farmstead Bakery in the Jewel Plaza, the bottom of the Jewel Plaza, right? I think that's, mm-hmm. that's the one right there. Like, I remember Daniel Larkin saying, you know, when they approved that super tall, super, you know, dense, terrible, apartment complex that was going to ruin the vibe of the neighborhood. All the neighbors were terrified. They'd never seen that before,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't know what it was going to be like. It was just going to be gnarly traffic and these terrible people that moved in from wherever and you know, brought their dogs to poop on their lawn or whatever. Turns out, none of that stuff actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
The whole neighborhood ended up getting Farmstead Bakery next door. And the neighbors that live in the building go out for walks and say hi to the other neighbors that live around the community.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Who doesn't want a good bakery right in their neighborhood?
None of that scary stuff that they were afraid of happened, but
mm-hmm.
it's okay that they were afraid. Now that we can see it, we have two or three other of those type of complexes coming in appropriate places within our downtown area, you know, like old lots and old stores and that need to be, that have burnt down and need to be taken down.
That are ready for rehab. Yeah.
This is a section. Nobody's going to come over to this corner and these couple of, and this little area and say, oh my gosh, we can't build something new and modern and nice here because we really need to preserve the weeds. No, it's totally okay. It's appropriate.
Yeah.
And they can now see it and say, that's not so scary. That kind of a snowball will roll across our community from east to west and from the downtown area kind of outward. And if we can get the city on the hill up here going and then and people can see it, I think all those things will contribute to the long-term solution to the problem.
Awesome. Well, I just love hearing your vision. I like that you've seen what some of the good solutions are and that we're seeing those coming rolling on.
I'm sure that we could probably you could bring somebody else in here and they could tell you all the problems. Because I'm sure I'm missing all the
to hear an optimist, though. I love to hear the hopeful visions of how we're going to solve this problem, because sometimes it just seems so unsolvable. And I love how you're approaching it from the economic standpoint, too. I just remember when I was young, a young married trying to stay here. Mm-hmm. And, my sister was in the lending industry and she when everything went south and she came down here to try to break into our market and it was really hard. And I was like, yeah, I know we make less money because we like to live here and there aren't the jobs, but we love it here and we want to stay. She ended up moving back up north and she does amazing up there now. But she was like, if you guys would move up north, you could make so much more money. And I was like, I don't want to move up north. I love Southern Utah and I really want to stay here. And so I'm so grateful for companies like Zonos that are trying to
economically. I was in that same. They actually saved me from leaving. I was here. My parents had already moved here. My dad was helping me raise my children, and I really, really, really cherished that connection we had. And yet I'd kind of played out the string on the job side, and I was interviewing for jobs in the Lehigh area. Things were banging up there, and I was also looking back in Ogden where I had come from. And I just got saved by the bell. Clint and Zonos caught me a week before we were gone.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
said, hey, why don't you stick around and work for us? And I was like, I'm all over that, right?
Yeah,
I really, really want to stay here. And it worked out. And but it was just luck. It's just luck and timing. Mm-hmm. And I don't want luck and timing to be the answer for my children, for your children, for everyone's children to be able to stay here if they want to.
Yeah,
so I
love
that.
So I
think there's something more than just luck and timing. We need to do a little bit more. And I'll tell you that the growing industries of, the tech industries, let's take the aerospace, let's even take the medical, let's take the software spaces. We're definitely trying to do our part to create the kind of jobs that make it viable. Now, I don't know if it's going to get you that $800,000 3-bedroom. That's a little bit of a stretch unless you're a really good programmer.
I heard that described as a sign of exuberance in our market.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, they got a little excited.
Good luck getting that price for that.
That was exuberant and exciting. But, but I do think that the growth in these tech industries, and I was at the Rise Summit. One of the things we talked a lot about was the pipeline development and just getting in front of our young people, are super bright and talented young people, and helping them understand what opportunities weren't here for their mom and dad. It's really hard because it's hard to see what you can't see.
What you haven't seen yet.
And their mom and dad did not have those opportunities.
Right.
And so they went into other fields and had to do other things or leave the area in order to get those kinds of jobs. Well, those jobs can come here and they can be, honestly, they can be the reason that their jobs come. Mm-hmm. Like this company that I work for, I mean, we're out there selling and on a really great idea. But if the talent doesn't come up, if we can find the talent and put it in the chair, that talent makes us more money. That's why we put it in the chair in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. So if we can get into that lower end of the pipeline, which we've been actively doing in Utah Tech and Dixie State College and Dixie Tech, and everybody has been doing this for a very long time, we're going to reap the rewards of that hard work and these great STEM-focused children for years and years and years to come. Like that work has already been done. We just need to keep doing more of that work now because the demand is going to increase.
Yeah, and I love that. My kids go to a STEM school, and I just love that focus and then being able to see so many things. I never saw those things as a kid, so it's great. Cool. Well, do you have anything else you want to say about attainable housing before we wrap this up today?
I guess talking to thinking about what I've learned, it's really important that we help people understand what happens when you're between 50 and 80% below the median income, right? There's this kind of this error. I might even be wrong. It might be 80 to 50. I might be quoting the numbers, but there's the median income number. And then if your household is below that in certain brackets, it basically signals what you can afford and what kind of lifestyle you are and pressures you're under. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is it's a lot easier to keep people in some sort of stable housing environment than it is to get them back into a housing environment once they've lost it.
Yeah.
So paying special attention to that lower bracket and having some alternatives and pushing for some maybe higher density but more affordable
entry level
spaces,
yeah,
for these families is key to, like, mm-hmm, making everything else work. Because if you lose those people, the amount of money you have to spend and the amount of effort it takes to get them back up on their feet, and this, I can see this as an example of myself and when I lost a house, and the effort and the energy that it took to get back up on your feet, it's tremendous. Mm-hmm. And as a society, we're going to end up spending a lot of money on that. We could spend the money better by providing those opportunities and having those places for people to never fall off that cliff.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a better place to put the money. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. So when we see our state legislators, when we see our county and our city officials pushing for that group of people and for services and money and support to help that group of people, it's actually an economic decision. They're doing the right thing, mm-hmm, not only because it's the right thing for those people, it's the right thing for our community, it's the right thing for our state,
yeah,
to put resources into that group.
And I think sometimes the secret is just don't stand in their way. Like, mm-hmm, they have studied this, they have done the research, mm-hmm, that we don't have time to do. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes
it
the best thing we can do is just say,
like,
I'm not sure about
sometimes
this, but like, well, maybe we should let them try it.
I pulled, yeah, myself up by my sandal straps and whatever, yeah, and why do these people deserve a handout? Take a half a step back. That's another one of those micro things, which you're,
yeah,
right. You're right. It looks like a handout, and you're not wrong. But if you take another step back and think, I can give a medium handout, I can help approve a small handout now to help people that are in need, or I can wait until they fall through the cracks, and then we have a much bigger, much more expensive problem that,
yes,
also damages our community, which,
yeah,
is what we're talking about in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to preserve is this robust, well-rounded, diverse community of people that coexist happily with one another.
Yes, yes. I love that. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate all your insights that you've shared with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay, we'll catch you later.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.